I almost didn't do this podcast, almost didn't jump on here and have this conversation. I planned to on my way into work today, and then ended up having a good shift. Weirdly, not because of anything I was involved in. I was on a guard for the whole shift, so nothing I was personally involved in, but someone on the team has had one of our prolific clients ride the lightning. So couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke, the subject I mean. And he's taken one from a police car on the way down as well. So the champagne and OJ was in full flow back at the office. So it was a good day. Come on, man, you can't just pull out. That's just there are laws here, sir. Where was I? Yes. So it's a good day from a team perspective on this guard. And I just, it's funny because it's all going a little bit up and down. The bloke I was in there with was being a bit of a sausage as the remand was going on. Weird that. And I've sort of moved in and, you know, bladed off and all that stuff as the skipper was doing his bit. And then right at that moment, as this was all going on, and he goes, fuck's sake, brother, you fucking knew this earlier on, yeah? You fucking knew this. Why don't you fucking tell me earlier on? Get my fucking mum on the phone, yeah? As all that was happening, I could hear it squawking in my ear. I was struggling to get one of the barbs out. Sorry, crack the radio around it a bit more. I beg your pardon. So I was sort of listening in, and I hear that the lightning has been ridden, so to speak. And I thought, I can't believe I'm on this. I mean, I'm in here with this cretin, and all that's happening. But I was, once I found out everyone was all in order after that initial bit of what the fuck is going on was over and done with, very, very pleased for my colleague involved. Good day. And it was a cherry as well, so very, very good. So it's been a good shift, and what I'm going to talk about is, I suppose it has a dark tinge to it. It's something that is probably a bit uncomfortable for me to talk about. But that's probably why I should do it. And I'm not even sure on the order of things here. I'm going to start by, I want to define the term professional. I don't know if I've ever done this on this podcast before. I've done enough of these now to sort of lose. And I've had so many ideas about things to do on the podcast that I can't remember what I've put into place and what I haven't. And I don't really listen back, despite how much I do enjoy listening to myself. I don't listen back to the podcast, so I don't know what I've put on here and what I haven't. I'm going to start by talking about the concept of the professional, because I want to be clear about what I mean by this term, because I think it can be easily conflated with what I think are like colloquialisms about the word professional. I want to sort of set a definition, and then I'm going to hopefully loop this conversation back round to the concept of the professional. So what I mean by professional, I mean professional in the context of to put it into a sentence, like a professional athlete or a professional actor or a I can't think of what else we would say, but when we think of a professional sports person, athlete, we know that by that we mean that this is how that individual puts bacon on the table. This is what they do. They're not playing in a Sunday league. It's not recreational. it's not a hobby in the background. This is what they do. And I think the athlete analogy is a good comparison, because if you're a professional athlete, you don't do an awful lot else. You are working at your trade, whatever sport or athletic pursuit that is, and the time you're not doing that, you're essentially preparing, recovering, prepping for the participation of or training for your sport or athletic pursuit of choice. That I find that concept of the professional is a good analogy, I think, for what I mean when I say a professional police officer. I don't mean, which I think is an easy inference to make, I'm not talking about the quality of work when I say, oh, he's a professional. You might say that about, that kitchen that bloke fitted around my house is amazing. Oh yeah, he's a real professional. You're using it as a compliment about the quality of work. I don't necessarily mean that. My definition, I want to remain detached from the quality of work. It's the idea, rather, that this is what the person does. This is what I do. And with certain limitations, everything I do outside of, or everything this person does outside of their profession, is, like the athlete, preparation for or done with a view to enhance the quality of that professional pursuit. I think this is a useful idea for the police officer, and with a police officer, it's probably a bit more organic and a bit more subtle than what the athlete does. You could use other professions as an analogy here, but I think the athlete one works well. I would say, and I think this is true of most police officers, and certainly the police officers that are doing a good job, that policing is what they do. It's not a side gig. It's not a, this is what I do to pay the bills, and my real passion I get into in the evenings and at the weekend at XYZ Club. It's not what I'm doing while I'm saving up to do this. It's not what I'm doing while I'm getting my shit together to go on this big adventure, and that's really my passion. It's generally not like that. There are, of course, people in the job for whom being a police officer, it is that, but I think they are in a drastic minority by comparison to two sex cars. By comparison to people like myself, where this is what I do. I'm here for the long game. And the things, to an extent, with certain limitations allowing, the things I do outside of this, that my sort of hobbies and pursuits, they are done sort of in service to my ability to be a professional police officer. So, you know, I know it's good for me to, how can I phrase this? I don't finish my shift and go home and only think about policing. Quite the opposite, actually. I'm fairly stringent about my detachment and compartmentalisation from the job, but that is because I know that to live in an eternal swamp of policing, where I'm going home and talking about jobs and, you know, watching police dramas or documentaries, or reading about, you know, police officers or investigations, or I know that that's a poor service to my ability to be a police officer. Actually, what I need is, when I'm parading for duty at the start of my shift, I need to be refreshed, I need to be keen, I need to be sort of ready to rock and roll at that point. And what facilitates my doing that is a clear delineation, that sharp detachment when I leave the nick and get in my car and go home, which is funny, come to think of it, because I'm now doing a podcast about policing. But let's say when I get to the front door, which is why, funnily enough, I will allow myself the use of sliders to get to the nick to my car, or vice versa. Sliders are a terrible choice if you've got any concern about your ability to react to something that might unfold around you. I would not be recommending sliders to anyone who wants to have any degree of mobility when they're out and about in a public environment. Sliders are a terrible, terrible idea. I'm not a paranoid person by any stretch, but I am aware that I may need, there's a small chance that I may need to turn and burn at some point when I'm out and about. Particularly, you know, I'm particularly aware of this if I'm going out with my family. So I wouldn't be wearing sliders out with my family. But I do allow it for myself to and from the nick, and I do that because you can't get a sharper distinction. You can't get further on the spectrum of footwear between sliders and what we wear for work. So that's why I'll allow myself to do it, because there is nothing that is going to get you out of that job mode than putting a pair of sliders on. Plus, it's a strong look for me. So that's why, that's why I'll allow that. Anyway, where were we? The concept of the professional. Okay, I think I've defined that fairly well, and I'm going to try and circle back to that shortly. Just get a drink, guys, and negotiate this roundabout. Stand by. There we are. Ooh, we continue. Not one. There's the drink there. But hey. Right. So I'm going to talk about something that happened to me recently. Where, to put it simply, I had to quit. I had to give up. I had to put my hands up in the air and say, I cannot do this. I'd taken on what we'll call, for the purposes of this conversation, a project at work, and I had a hard deadline for this. And as that deadline was approaching, I was realizing to stronger degrees every day, I'm not on schedule for this deadline. In fact, I am massively behind schedule for this deadline. And if I continue on this course, I will miss the mark here by some embarrassing degree. And I kept pushing and kept trying to get it done and kept trying to invent time and kept drinking more coffee and trying to sleep less, and it kept not happening over and over again, day after day after day, which was a fairly painful process. And I really believe it's a sort of central tenet of my life that if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging. I'm going out on my shield. And if I'm going to lose at something, if I'm going to fail, I'm going to fail with no excuses. And I'm going to go until there's no sweat and blood left. If I'm going to fail. And I did hit that point about a day or 2 days before the deadline was up. I had to put my hands up in the air and I had to say, I can't do this. I give up. I'm going to have to give up. This isn't physically possible, and I'm going to need to take whatever consequences are likely to come my way. I had to make some awful phone calls. And I objectively failed this project that I set out to do. And I, in the process of that, or sort of immediately afterwards, I thought, oh, there you go. There's the limit. That's how much you can do with your life right now. The streams of energy that you're putting forth here, you're at the maximum. And I know I'm at the maximum because I've just failed. Now, whether I failed because of effort or time management or because it was objectively impossible, doesn't really matter. I'm not particularly interested in that, I don't think, because whether it was a failure of effort or of willpower or of simply hours in the day, of course my ego wants the latter to be true, but I have to be realistic about this. A different person than me may well have got this done through effort and willpower that I evidently didn't possess in these circumstances. And that's a hard thing for me to deal with, but it is a fact nonetheless. And I think that's one of the most admirable qualities that a person can have is something that George Orwell said about himself. It's a standard, I think, that's worth striving for. He said, "I knew I could do this writing because I had some literary ability," which I think is a very good point, by the way, about Orwell. That is the exact phrase, "some literary ability," because he's not Scott Fitzgerald, he's not Oscar Wilde. You're not enraptured by the language. You don't sort of fall over at the mastery of the sentences in Orwell's stuff. Orwell is like a he's sort of like an average but very proficient semi-automatic rifle. Every sentence is just bang, bang, bang. Is nothing really? It's not a sniper rifle, or a belt-fed machine gun. It's consistent and impactful, and very, very efficient. I think that's a good way to think about it. If you read Orwell and try and put that cadence in your head, every sentence, bang, 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 bang. If you want a picture. If you want an image of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. So, some literary ability, and this is what I was actually coming to. Some literary ability and a power of facing unpleasant facts. That's an arresting sentence. A power of facing unpleasant facts. George Packer, who wrote one of the best books on Orwell, I forget the actual title, but he was going to call it A Power of Facing. Or maybe that was Hitchens. Maybe that was Hitchens when he wrote Why Orwell Matters. Maybe he was going to call that A Power of Facing. I don't know. But the phrase is, I don't think you can argue with it. It's an arresting one. All right. Oscar Wilde, you know, I hope you wouldn't be offended if I said that you seem to me to be the absolute personification of absolute perfection. Yeah, that, you read that, fuck me, like, where's he got that from? I hope you wouldn't be terribly offended if I said you seem to me to be the absolute personification of absolute perfection. That's sort of wizardry with words. That's why we have the phrase. That's why we spell words. You know, there's a kind of magic in those words. You don't really get that with Orwell, but efficient and impactful, and nonetheless, a power of facing unpleasant facts. And I try, insofar as possible, to do that in myself. Try to face unpleasant facts about me. It's actually, not to be too tangential about this, but I think it actually is what provides you sort of license to be a bit of a dick. You know who's a really good example of this? A really good example is Russell Brand. There is so much stuff that comes out of Russell Brand's mouth that I go, oh, fuck off. But he knows, I would argue, he knows exactly why you have that reaction. And there's no one better making a joke out of it than him. The bloke's insight into his own to use like a job expression, into how fucking weary he sounds sometimes, that is what grants him license to behave that way. And I think what I mean by being a bit of a dick, I mean like you could quite easily, if you have the sort of blood running blue thing that I have, you could quite easily come across like a right prick if you didn't have the insight that would allow enough self-deprecation and enough mugging yourself off more effectively than anyone else can. Without that, I think you might struggle a little bit. It's that, and that is somehow connected to that power of facing unpleasant facts. I sort of try to embody that kind of self-awareness. I think it's powerful. I think it's useful. So that was a fact I had to face. I've hit the limit here. I looked at this task. I made an assessment of my life and thought, yeah, I can take this project on top of all the other stuff that I'm trying to get done, on top of my my professional life as a police officer. That's why it was important to define that word, I've just realised. And for something else I want to come back to, but that in the main. I've hit the limit. I've failed. I've gone through the red line and the engine has blown. Now, I'm okay, by the way. This wasn't the kind of engine blowing where I'm curled up in the fetal position. This was the engine blowing professionally. I cannot complete this task. Oh, fuck. I haven't lost anything, but I've not gained something I could have gained. I stood to gain a great deal on the completion of this project, and I failed to make that gain. And I was thinking, is this? It occurred to me that there was something sort of empowering in that moment where I put my hands up in the air and said, I can't do this. And it was immediately afterwards when I was thinking, well, there it is. There's the limit. That's the failure point. For whatever reason, effort, willpower, fortitude, time management, intellectual ability, whatever it is, whatever amalgam of those things, that is the limit for you, mate. That is what you can do. So I know precisely where the limit is. And the empowering element of that was, well, I know, and therefore I can't be, what's the line? I can't be among those timid souls who never know the something-something of victory or defeat. I can't be there. I know. I know what the limit is. There's the failure point. And it occurred to me that that's a powerful thing to know. If only for the management of your life moving forward. How you set out the map towards your objectives. I know in the future when I'm assessing something as potentially an avenue that I'm going to proceed down, I will have a reference point of exactly where I failed. And if when I form sort of an estimate of how much energy XYZ task or project or pursuit is going to demand of me, I can factor that failure point in. And if it's comparable, if it's close, if it's past, I can say, no, that's a mistake. You've been here before. That's a mistake. Unless, of course, I make some modification or adaptation to my the way I'm running my life currently that would allow me to predict a greater failure point in the future. I just can't see that being the case, but of course it might be. So in short, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to know this limit. I think it's a good thing to hit that point that I hit. But it's really not a good idea. And this is something I knew. It's funny because I knew this. I knew this already. This is not new information to me, but it's not good. It's not productive. It's not strategically viable to live a redlined existence like that. And I knew this before I took this on. I knew that I was really pushing what I could do with the amount of plates that I was spinning. I knew I was pushing the envelope, and yet I still took this on. And I think it's important to define the reason it's not good to operate in that space. It's not good to operate in a space where if some other mode of stress comes in, like this project for me, that the engine will blow and you'll not be able to proceed. It's not good to live in that space because if that's the way you're living, you are by definition living a sprint-like existence. Every day it's going to be foot to the floor. It's going to be get up and go, attack, full berserker mode. Because that's going to be what's required to exist in that space. That before I took this on, that was how my life was set up currently. Now, say I knew that then, as I know now, that's not viable long term, and I had a roadmap out of that, which I should be making some. It's difficult to keep the anonymity here, but I there'll be adjustments being made over the next few months or so that'll bring that rev count down. you can't live a sprinting existence. This is a long haul. This is a distance event. This is an endurance pursuit life. I mean, you can't do that. I would recommend that you live an engaged existence. You live a life where even maybe you're approaching that red line. Maybe over a day or two or 3 days or a week. But then we come back down. We have that recovery period where you've got a powerful engine that's just comfortably progressing, as opposed to living in that red space where you're redlining the furnace that is you. This is an endurance event. And the last thing I wanted to say is if you're listening to this and you think, actually, I can't even get anywhere near that because there are other areas of my life that are requiring so much energy that I can't actually say that I'm, that word again, I'm a professional at what I do. I'm a professional police officer because I just have so many, I have other things that I'm managing that are requiring resources from me to such a degree that I can't, this isn't actually my primary pursuit. The that athlete analogy doesn't work for me. If you're saying that because the source that's requiring energy from you is your partner or your immediate family, I want to say something to you. If you're listening to this and thinking those thoughts, if it's you, if you think, actually, my family life and my particularly partner, you know, my other half, girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, husband, anything in between, this is quite a delicate thing to talk about as well, but I think it is worth talking about. The only way I think this is possible is if, yeah, I'm going to take it down to partner, actually, because that's what I'm talking about here. The only way that this works is if your other half, whoever that is, if they understand what I mean by the idea of the professional. I have innumerable concerns and things to be addressed in my life. None of them are my partner, my wife. None of them. My wife, for all the consequences it has, absolutely understands that I am a professional at this. My wife understands that this is what I do. Even, again, we come back to that old Orwellian phrase, the fact must be faced, even the fact must be faced at the expense of my family. I'm not talking about the way I feel about my family. I would back myself against anyone in a competition to see who loves their family the most. But the reality is that I will put so much on the line with this job that sometimes, not always, sometimes, frequently, I'd say, there is very little, if nothing, left. And when When I return home, it is purely a recuperation event. I am going there because I need to reboot and recharge in order that I can go in for the next shift and do it all again. And if we run with that athlete analogy as well, my wife is the coach, she's the cornerman, she's the physio, she's the nutritionist, she's the head trainer, she's the agent, she's the manager, she is all of those things. And actually I'd go as far as to say that we could flip the analogy and say that my wife is a professional wife. Being a wife is what my wife does. It's difficult to talk about, actually. Everything in my wife's life comes second to her being a wife and a mother to our children. And that's the only way I can do this. The only way. And I'm not speaking theoretically here. I'm telling you from my experience. It's the only way that I could do this. Now, it may be that it can be done differently. I don't know. But I'm saying for me, it was impossible to do that. And I've done it. You'll see the point I'm driving at here. I've done it both ways. I've done this career. I've done this job with and without my wife, and to do it the way I do it now would be impossible without her, and without somebody who understood that concept of the professional. And I'm not being prescriptive here. But I think many, many years ago, when my situation was not as it is now, I'd have liked to have heard this. When I was living essentially a different life, and I was not performing anywhere near where I'm performing now, and I didn't even have this concept of the professional. This is what I do. I would never have thought it was this. I would never have thought my ability in that space, in that policing world, is contingent upon the support I have outside of that job. And the relationship I have outside that job. I would have been blindsided by that idea. But I think it would have done me good. So I sort of felt obliged to talk about it. because it occurred to me when I was thinking about this process of hitting my limit and realizing that I can't do this and I have to reel back a little bit here, and I was already pushing it very hard anyway before I took this on, and then I thought, you know, there's no way I could even be pushing it this hard if I didn't have my wife. You know, it's funny, I will the I say this to my wife sometimes. I say, the people at work, I think, would, the cops I work with, would it would be alien to them to see me as I am at home sometimes. And I think that's a good thing, by the way. I think it's a good thing that there's some demarcation between who I am in that uniform and who I am outside and particularly at home. But what I specifically mean is that I am so fucked sometimes that I am absolutely formless. I'm almost sort of vacant. My personhood vacates me. There are innumerable days where I've given so much to that profession, to that job. Mentally, physically, emotionally, that I just come home and collapse. And I rebuild again, and we'll eat and talk, I'll upservice the kit again and get everything charged, and go for a run and have another protein shake, and then I'll come back in, and then it's me again walking through. All right, boy, let's go get it then. That's me. That's the person they know. But that is. That is impossible without the support I have. I'm not, just to wrap up, I'm not being prescriptive here. I don't at all want to be saying to anyone what they should be looking for in their relationships. But I'm simply sharing that for me. If you're listening and thinking, I can't push it that hard, and I don't really know why. For me, the limiting factor, the reason I couldn't put anywhere near as much energy forward as I do now, was because my energy was divided elsewhere. It was required elsewhere. This is a difficult concept to explain, and I really just wanted to talk about the idea of running into your limit. But I've bolted this on for what it might be worth anyone listening. That's it, guys. Take care of yourself. Be good. If you need me, you know where I am, on Instagram @UKCopPodcast. All right, have a good one. I'll catch you soon. Bye-bye.